from LPM,
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
I'm Rick Howlett, and this is In Conversation. This month, we're focusing most of our shows on home and housing, and today we're going to talk about renting. We'll hear about the rental market in our area and beyond, and the availability of affordable, livable housing. We'll talk about your rights and responsibilities as a renter and those of your landlord. We'll be joined by Tony Curtis, the Executive Director of the Louisville Housing Coalition, Louisville Metro Council member Ja'Cory Arthur, and Jake Ryan and Adeshina Emanuel from the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, which has been looking into housing issues. We want to hear your thoughts about renting and the rental market. Give us a call this hour on In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Welcome to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville. Glad you're with us today as we discuss a subject that touches a lot of people. As we continue our theme of home this month on the program, we're going to spend this hour talking about a way in which many people make their home, and that is renting, signing a lease, putting down a deposit in most cases, often undergoing a background and or credit check and paying monthly rent to a landlord. We'll talk about the rights and responsibilities of renters and their landlords and the bigger picture of the rental market in our area and region. How big is the demand for rental properties? Are there enough affordable rental units available? What happens with neighborhoods when neighborhoods are gentrified and rents skyrocket to keep pace with higher property values? This is also an area of the economy where, sadly, people still face discrimination based on race, gender, nationality, sexual orientation, or socioeconomic status. Sometimes that inequity is more subtle, but no less illegal. We'll talk about that today as well. We have four guests with us today. Louisville Metro Councilman Ja'Cory Arthur represents the council's 4th District, which covers a large section of the heart of the city from the West End through downtown and to parts of East Louisville, lots of it along the Ohio River. He serves on several council committees and is chairman of the council's Committee on Equity and Inclusion. You also might be familiar with his work as a musician and teacher. He's been involved with legislation related to our discussion today. Councilman, welcome to In Conversation.
Please, thank you for having me.
Welcome to Tony Curtis. He became executive director of Louisville's Metropolitan Housing Coalition in January of 2022. The coalition formed in 1989. It's a group of approximately 300 individual and organizational members, including nonprofit housing developers, financial institutions, service providers, and neighborhood and advocacy groups. And together they facilitate research-based advocacy for fair, accessible, and affordable housing in Louisville. Prior to coming to the coalition in 2018, Tony worked for 11 years at the Kentucky Historical Society in Frankfort, where he was a public historian and documentary editor. Tony, welcome to In Conversation.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
We have two journalists with us from the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, part of WFPL and Louisville Public Media. The center's been looking into housing issues and soliciting information for future reporting. Adeshina Emanuel is the managing editor for the center. He just joined the team earlier this summer. And speaking of our theme of home, Louisville is his new home. Ade moved here from Chicago, where he previously was editor-in-chief of Injustice Watch, an investigative newsroom focused on courts, the criminal justice system, housing, and immigration. Ade, welcome to the show, and welcome to Louisville.
Thanks for having me.
Jake O'Brien joined the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting in December 2017 for 3 years prior. He worked as a WFPL news reporter. And Jake has been doing a lot of reporting on housing and rental issues in the Louisville area and beyond. And Jake, it's good to have you back. Welcome.
Yes, happy to be here.
We want to hear from you, too. Do you have an experience you want to share with us about being a renter or finding a suitable rental dwelling? What do you think about the oversight of the rental market? Should there be more control, either by the government or another entity, over rent prices? Is there discrimination that's going unchecked? Well, Tony, let me start with you. We always start with kind of a big view when we begin the program. When we talk about housing and affordable housing in Louisville or any city and community, How big is the rental piece? How important is a vibrant rental market, not only to the housing health of the city, but its overall economic health?
That's a great question. And we have this discussion constantly. It's been renters have grown in Louisville. We've had a more reliance on rental properties since the housing collapse of 2008. We have a need for a little over 31,000 units at or below 30% AMI and up to 55,000 units at 50% below area median income in Louisville. And so it's a large swath of the Louisville population is ever more reliant on rental opportunities. And with the price of housing going up, which limits home ownership opportunities, with rents going up in reaction to that because of landlords knowing that people are more reliant on rental properties, we have a real need, and we have a real need for policies that actually affect change and protect renters. There's a very imbalance in the relationship between tenants and landlords right now. Just looking at some of the recent reporting too, that and just thinking about the pandemic, right? That housing and health are inextricably related to each other, intertwined. And so this is a large section of the Louisville economy. This is a large section of people's lives, trying to find ways in which we can invest in people, which is an investment in housing, which creates, as I say, a keystone for the rest of the issues we face: educational outcomes, economic opportunity, access to healthcare, life expectancy. These are all critical issues, and it all relates to housing stability, and that's where we need to start.
And Tony, people rent for different reasons, don't they? You know, a lot of times it's a transition to home ownership, but some people prefer to rent. They find a situation that they like. It works better for them, and sometimes it works great in the long term. So there's also a need for those people to find suitable places as well, right?
That's correct. I mean, there are many different ways in which people decide to have housing stability. You know, stability is the important question here, and whether that's through renting an apartment that is healthy, that is safe, that is a good relationship for the renter themselves, or if they choose it as a transitional point and kind of look at it more of as a continuum, as a step towards, in many ways, hopefully a pathway towards home ownership is the way for people to look to their future. And so we need to make sure there are policies and there's funding in place for that to happen. We see programs like, you know, Section 8 home ownership that has been very successful in Louisville over the years. Why don't we have more programs like that that aren't just based in Section 8, but there are pathways to home ownership for people if they choose that's the way. But renting is a huge part of the picture and will continue to be a huge part of the picture. And it's about housing choice. It's about housing opportunity and having that ability to do that across all of Louisville.
For those who don't know, tell us a little bit about the Coalition and what resources does it offer to people who are looking for affordable rental properties, especially those in the low-income brackets.
Yeah, and we get confused a lot of times that we are a Louisville Metro government organization, which we're not. We're an independent nonprofit, been around for 33 years. For 19 years now, we have produced the annual State and Metropolitan Housing Report, which usually has a focus topic on a critical issue that needs to be discussed in the community and tracks different measures of housing stability. We released the 2022 report in June of this year. It is a roadmap. It is an inventory of housing policy in Louisville so that as we transition, especially later this year, to a new mayoral administration and Metro Council's faces change a little bit, it's a roadmap and an inventory for policymakers to make better housing policy and hit the ground running. But it's also for community members to go out there and advocate in community to make sure they have the best data available. We have 19 years of data on housing. Next year will be the 20th anniversary of that. So we make sure people have the data. And then we go out in the community and advocate and educate based on that data. And we do that on a yearly basis. We'll also be releasing two more reports this year, one on housing instability of families with children, and another one on eviction prevention and understanding landlord motivation. So stay tuned for those. But it's for MHC, it's about working at that higher level to influence the policy conversation and get people engaged and informed. And you can look at www.metropolitanhousing.org for all the reports we've released. We do webinar sessions in the community. And ultimately, it's about educating the community and a call to action to get people involved in the process.
Councilman Jacory Arthur, let me turn to you. The Metro Housing Coalition, as Tony mentioned, is a nonprofit organization, often gets confused with Metro government. Let's talk about city government's role. What role is city government playing, or in your opinion, should better play if it's not in having a healthy selection of rental options, especially in underserved areas?
I think the government should always be a safety net for people. Metro Council added protections to our fair housing ordinance so that people with, you know, legal income, housing voucher, Section 8 can rent anywhere. I'll shout out to our Human Relations Commission that's been doing work on taking care of folks who've been discriminated against. So if you're discriminated against with your housing, please call them. Please report any issues with landlords, AKA slumlords. We also approve funding so that low-income families with kids get legal representation if they're going through the eviction process. We approve funding to build more affordable housing with income limits for households at the lowest level of income. As of this month, more of our federal spending in terms of percentage has been spent on homelessness and affordable housing than any other city in the country. We also have pending legislation now to make sure that we're doing proactive code enforcement on rental units. Codes and regulations usually only comes out when there are complaints. But when we pass these amendments to the rental registry, they'll check randomly and find landlords as they need to so that they're keeping up with those units. We have a resolution calling on the housing authority to cancel their contract with a very problematic private company that is not held to the same standards as our housing authority. And something new that I'll just drop here is that we're starting to use our leverage as government when we pay for affordable housing, when we're forgiving loans, when we're using tax incentives, making sure that tenants' rights are agreed to even more than what we already have at the state level. So those are just some examples. A lot of times we're hearing excuses about what we can and cannot do because of state law, but that does not mean we shouldn't fight back in other ways and get creative about how we can address the housing crisis. It is a responsibility of local government, but it's also a responsibility of state and federal government because the deficit is way too big for local government to handle alone.
Well, we're going to come back after a break and talk much more about this with our guest. We're talking about rental housing today on In Conversation on WFPL with Louisville Metro Councilman Jacory Arthur, who you just heard, who represents Metro District 4, Tony Curtis, Executive Director of the Metropolitan Housing Coalition. And we're going to meet or hear for the first time from Jake Ryan with the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting and the Center's Managing Editor, Ade Emmanuel. That's all coming up after a break. Please stay with us for more of In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Welcome back to In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville. And today we are continuing our series of shows on home and housing with a discussion of renting and the rental markets here in Louisville and beyond. And our guests today are Tony Curtis, Executive Director of the Metropolitan Housing Coalition here in Louisville, and Metro Councilman Jacory Arthur, who represents Metro District 4, also with us. Two journalists from the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, including our new managing editor, Ade Emmanuel, and Jake Ryan, who reports for the center and has been with WFPL for a number of years. Well, Ade, let me turn to you from the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting. And before we talk about specifically about your work with Jake on renting, you, the center, has launched a long-term project focusing on housing, including the rental aspect, and you are soliciting information and participation from viewers and participants and listeners, right?
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, you know, when I got here, you know, I'm hesitant to dive too deep into acting like I know what's happening before I really learn the lay of the land, but it's something where I knew from my experiences in Chicago and past experience as a reporter, that housing is such a important, almost all-encompassing issue. It touches everyone. It touches almost every aspect of someone's life. You know, place really matters, where you're born, where you live, in terms of affecting your the quality of whether it's your education, the air you breathe. There's just so much at play. And also the sort of economic inequity aspect of it, and how that very much is shaped by housing opportunities and who does and doesn't own. So I was lucky to, you know, Jake already had this wonderful idea, and the staff had already been interested in looking at housing. I think especially during the pandemic and onward. And I thought that it would be great to start off things with listening, with hearing from the community, understanding people's experiences, what questions, concerns they had, and also asking them for their experiences. And a lot of folks have identified things that we'll look into for, you know, subsequent stories, but it's just really helped us get a handle on what the experience is like for the renters as we think about, you know, some of that unequal or imbalanced power relationships between tenants and landlords that, you know, Tony was speaking about.
And for those who don't know about it, haven't encountered the, there's a online form that you can fill out that you put in information, and we'll pass that information along in a little bit. But I want to turn to you now, Jake Ryan, because you've already done some reporting on this, including a piece that talks about the corporate purchase of properties that's affecting rents, the amount of rent people pays and other factors in certain neighborhoods in Louisville. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We did a report recently that does, you know, it started, well, I guess was how it started is we were interested in understanding who owns property in Louisville. Because as Ade mentioned, there's a lot of power imbalance, and as Tony and as Councilman Arthur has mentioned, there's a lot of power imbalance when it comes to the ownership of property. And with the transitions that are happening in the city right now, we wanted to get a kind of a hold on just, you know, who has it. And we found that there is this company in Austin, Texas. It's a big, large corporate entity that has several subsidiary companies in Louisville that own a total of 1,300 properties, mostly all single-family homes, you know, zoned for single-family homes. And it was pretty shocking to almost everyone we spoke with about just the expansive footprint that this company has. And so when we dug into it, we found kind of like what you were talking about, is that the company can have an effect on rents. It can have an effect on living conditions for people, the ability, you know, for city officials to enforce it. And, you know, and to even legislate to fix some of these issues that might be brought up. And it's part of a larger national scope too, which is, it's just a very interesting thing for sure.
You sent us some audio, Jake, of some folks you talked to. Let's talk about Desiree Fields for a moment. Let's listen to some audio from her.
There's like this whole complex of like kind of corporate financial players that are active in the market for single family homes now. And I think that comes directly out of 2008. And the result has been to make the housing market a lot more unequal.
Jake, tell us about Desiree, first of all, and she mentioned 2008, which is interesting, was when the housing market, just the bottom fell out of it, you know, during the 2008 recession because of big investment in housing that fell through, right?
That's right, yeah. So a lot of houses came available, and some of the same institutional, you know, level companies and players that you know, were participating in the mortgage industry at the time saw this market open up of single family homes. And so they began buying single family homes. There's kind of a handful of companies that do this on a national scale, and they just gobble up these homes, right? They buy so many homes, and then they can use investors to effectively, as Dr. Fields has found, it's like a low interest loan that the companies can get to then buy more houses in communities like Louisville, Atlanta, Charlotte, you know, out in Nebraska, up in the Northeast. Like there's a whole, you know, just cities just like Louisville, you know, they're buying thousands of homes. And they can really just shape the market, and they have an outsized advantage because they do have so much money. They can forego some of the things that a lot of home buyers can't do without, like an inspection on a home or a mortgage loan. they have the ability to just offer a cash off, to give a cash offer, and they have the technology, the ability to review hundreds of home listings every day. You know, there's been reporting done on Amherst Residential. That's the company that owns most of the houses, or that's the company that owns 1,300 houses in Louisville. Mm-hmm. They have the technology, you know, every morning, you know, they're delivered several hundred home listings across the country, and then they review it to ensure that it meets a certain criteria. And then, you know, they can move forward with offers. And local realtors see this happening because there's only a certain number of homes available in Louisville. And when, you know, one company is buying a lot of them up, there's a lot of attention on that. And there's tension, and there's worry, I think, as well.
And Dr. Desiree Fields, she's been studying this trend, right?
That's right. Yes. Sorry. Yeah. Dr. Desiree Fields is a professor at the University of California, Berkeley. And she's studied this and about how the process works, about how some of these companies like Amherst Residential or American Homes for Rent or Invitation Homes, how they're able to expand like they are. And what she's found is that there's not really any sign that the companies are slowing down because there is so much money to be made here, and homes are expensive for people to buy, and there's this huge market for renters right now that ties back to, as she said and as Tony said, it ties back to the 2008 housing crisis.
We're talking about renting and the rental markets here in our area on In Conversation on WFPL with Jake Ryan from the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, who you just heard. His managing editor is also here with us, Ade Emmanuel. Tony Curtis, executive director of the Metro Housing Coalition, the nonprofit Metro Housing Coalition, is with us as well, along with Louisville Metro Councilman Ja'Cory Arthur. Donna in Louisville has been waiting patiently. Let's take a call from her. Hello, Donna. Welcome to In Conversation.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
What's on your mind today?
I was more concerned, and I've learned more just listening to Ja'Cory Arthur. I'm sorry, let me get my car off here. I've been out of the loop for quite some time, but I've always had a concern about slumlords. The fact that, whether through Section 8 or whatever, that people can rent out houses that are just dilapidated, black mold, infested with, you know, bugs or whatever, and that they get federal dollars for that. Could there not be some type of revamping of the federal, state and local programs that, you know, puts tighter limits on what's done or how things are done, and even, you know, hire inspectors to at least check these places out before they're rented, or an annual inspection or something, so that people, and especially people who are first-time renters, they don't have a clue. Or they've been in such bad situations all of their life, they think this is normal.
Councilman, you know, Arthur, I'll let you respond to that, and Tony Curtis as well, if you want to, after the councilman.
Absolutely. So the first thing I'll say is anyone who's experiencing discrimination, again, please report that to the Human Relations Commission, 502-574-3631. Or if you're experiencing issues with your landlord, you can also call 311 to put those reports in. Reporting is important because Metro government allocates resources, hiring people, figuring out where those resources go across the city based on complaints and based on reports. So please always report if you have an issue. I'll also add, you know, I'm glad I shared and able to educate people on what's being worked on. But again, those are at the local level. So at the state level, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Of course, organizing tenants across Kentucky, but also the state just changed a local law mandates how local government works. And we're supposed to be studying local government over the past 20 years since the city and the county merger on a commission. We're supposed to send a report to the state by September 2023. So for the next year, a commission of people, including local city council members, including some of our private companies, including some of our state representatives and senators, will be visiting different areas in Louisville, hearing directly from you about recommendations that we need to make to the state. So we need as many people as possible, specifically tenants, to show up to those meetings, speak, fight, and help us change state law. We can't just give up and say state law blocks and let's not do anything. We have an opportunity to do something, but we need the people to show up with us. There's only a handful of politicians. There are hundreds of thousands of tenants and people in this city. And unless we come together to fight back with the state, there's no change that's going to happen overnight.
And Tony, I'll let you, I'll give you a chance to respond as well. Where do you direct people who come to you with concerns about conditions in some of these rental properties, and at the same time, these landlords are getting federal assistance?
Yeah, we get, unfortunately, a fair amount of phone calls, and Councilman Arthur is correct. The Louisville Metro Human Relations Commission, even the Lexington Fair Housing Coalition, it's kind of a misnomer because they cover the entire state, not just Lexington, also is an agency that you can reach out to. I would say this, that, Councilman Arthur brought up, you know, they're updating the rental registry, and there's a huge portion of that. I mean, I think it still needs to be strengthened just a little bit more in regards to transparency, accountability, and kind of the enforcement provisions. But there is that in 10% inspection provision in it. There is a section of two about sworn affidavits that landlords have to sign an affidavit that the property owners will sign to make sure that they're in compliance with a metro's property maintenance codes. That self-attestation is huge because now you have the landlord saying it is inhabitable. And if there are mold problems or pest problems that are discovered, there's a bigger issue there because they've already signed a statement that said this hasn't happened. And so there are a lot of things at the state level talking about warrants of habitability, where that's not currently something that Kentucky has at the state level, but they haven't, you know, the landlord's obligation to provide a living space that is habitable, and other states have this. So there are ways in which we can affect change at the local and the state level, but we have to make those arguments and have that collective voice, like Councilman Arthur is saying, on what is needed. And that reporting is ultimately very important because we don't know what we don't know. And if codes, you know, codes is definitely overwhelmed, I think. If we continue to overwhelm them with reporting, maybe we'll kick some more money down their way to be able to enforce what is on the books.
Tony, what say I'm a landlord who in good faith wants to renovate or build an affordable housing unit somewhere in the community. What obstacles do I face, or in your opinion, if there are obstacles, what are they, and what suggestions do you have for kind of clearing the way for people, in landlords and investors, builders in good faith, to build affordable housing throughout the community?
This could be an hour long conversation in itself. But one of the major things that MHC is focused on for the last many years and for the foreseeable future is land development code reform. A big part of our work going back several years was looking at the comprehensive plan. So the most recent comprehensive plan passed in, I believe, 2019. It's a 20-year plan for the built environment. And for the first time ever, fair housing and affordable housing was included in it. Actually, the words were actually included in it. It had never been written in before. And so what that did was kind of present a foundation for having the discussion about land development code reform, because that's the regulatory document. And what it does, it tells you what can be built, where it can be built, and ultimately where people can live. And so as a Metro Council ordered an equity review of the land development code reform. We've been through phase one. There's two more phases coming up. But the barriers are persistent there because 75% of Louisville's land is zoned as single family housing. So you run into barriers to building multifamily housing, diverse types of housing, duplexes, quadruplexes, pocket neighborhoods that could potentially be areas that affordable housing can be built, and we can do that. And so if there's a barrier to zoning and land use issues, it's a fair housing issue. It's an affordable housing issue, and you've got to create that policy environment for people to be able to build those units, because it's not only about building the units, it's about preservation of those units and the affordability of those units, because depending on what program you take advantage of or developers take advantage of with tax credits, you have 15, 30-year requirements on affordability. Well, you don't want to talk about rent regulations or rent control. That's basically what that is. And so you have to maintain that. And if they don't reinvest in these properties because of areas of gentrifying and they see more advantageous to make it market rate housing to where they can make more money off of it, sometimes that happens. But if they reinvest in through some of these programs, they can maintain that affordability. If not, we're in this endless cycle of needing 31, 55,000 units and not preserving the units that we're building on a basis. So it's a much more complex picture than just talking about building units. It's about preservation of units.
Let's take another call. Melanie is in Louisville, and Melanie is with us, has been waiting patiently. Hi, Melanie. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Welcome.
So many things just piqued my interest. First of all, the reporting system or whatever for the rental registry, Acela is the most complicated, convoluted thing for landlords to even register their homes. But no, I work for a nonprofit and we provide rental vouchers. I have found like this Amherst just did a purchase recently of 300 and something properties in Louisville, and they didn't even notify the tenants that they had taken over as new owners, and then were filing evictions on them for non-payment, even though, I mean, we know that they were paid because we wrote the checks, but I mean, there's, and they're not maintaining the properties at all.
All right.
So, I mean, it's, they're complete breakdown.
I'm going to, we're going to take a break here and we will follow up on your call, Melanie. Thanks for giving us a call. Let me reintroduce everybody here as we talk about renting and rentals on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio and in conversation. Our guests today are Tony Curtis, Executive Director of the Metro Housing Coalition, Metro Councilman Jacori Arthur, and Jake Ryan and Adi Emanuel from the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting. We'll be back, follow up on Melanie's comments, and take more of your calls and talk much more about renting and the rental market here on In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Stay with us.
Support for LPM Podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Welcome back to In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville. Today we're continuing our series of shows on home and housing with a discussion of renting and the rental markets here in Louisville and beyond. Our guests today are Louisville Metro Councilman Jacori Arthur, Tony Curtis, Executive Director of the Metropolitan Housing Coalition here in Louisville, Jake Ryan, reporter for the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, and Jake's new boss, Adi Emanuel, who's managing editor of the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, just moved here this summer from Chicago. Councilman Arthur, Melanie, our caller before the break, mentioned the registry and maybe some difficulties that's been encountered with that. Talk about the rental registry. This is still a proposed ordinance, right? This is something you've been having hearings on.
The registry already exists. Oh. What we're proposing is that the registry is proactive in code enforcement instead of just going out when people file complaints. So again, always file those complaints, whether it's with 311 directly with codes and regs, or if it's discrimination, discrimination with the Human Relations Commission. Otherwise, if we don't have that information, it's hard for us to allocate resources and make policy decisions based on hearsay. So always file complaints.
And Tony, another thing, another potential problem she brought up was notifying people of new ownership. I'm sure there's federal or state laws and regulations regarding new ownership with tenants and keeping them informed of what's going on with their properties, right?
I don't know if I can speak to that with much authority. Jacob might have more insight into that from his reporting, but I can't really expound on that.
Okay, we'll find out. Let's take another call here. Ken is coming with us to us from a landlord perspective. We're glad to hear from Ken. Welcome to the program, Ken. Hello, Ken. Are you there?
I'm trying to speak to you. You're not hearing me?
I got you now. It was my fault.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
I feel like all these attacks on landlords, do people really think that that's going to encourage people to be landlords, that that's going to increase the rental market. To my mind, it decreases the rental market. I read in the paper about, well, the code enforcement, sometimes it's against tenants, sometimes it's against landlords. I've been going to them for 40 years. I mean, monthly. I have never seen a tenant in code enforcement. And many times the problems are tenant due. They don't clean. They don't use garbage bags. There was something about Shepherd Square in the paper that, oh, they're so overrun with vermin. They're only about 3 or 4 years old, some of those apartments. How did they get like that? They got like that because tenants don't clean, are not very good cleaners, and you have so limited, the city government has so limited the ability of landlords to restrict people from renting. You have poor people generally are worse tenants. They just are. They don't have money for garbage bags. They don't have money for cleaning supplies. Well, so they don't do those things as well. But, you know, under the new statutes or ordinances, there's such a limitation on the ability of landlords to exercise any discretion. And it just doesn't affect the value of their property. It also affects the well-being and the health of the neighbors.
Well, thanks for your call, Ken. I appreciate it. And obviously, there are people who rent who do not follow the agreement, their rental agreement, and hold up their end of the deal, regardless of their income level. There are wealthy people who do not hold up their end of the agreement as well and do terrible things with their properties. In terms of landlords, Tony, what's or Councilman Arthur, when you have a really, really bad renter, what I mean, what's the process like, Tony? What are the avenues for the landlord? They obviously have to give the renter a certain amount of time before they can be evicted, right?
Yes, it's all spelled out in the Uniform Landlord Residential Tenant Act. There are very specific things that landlords need to follow. There are very specific things that renters need to follow. It's unfortunately still created an imbalance in the relationship between tenants and landlords. But unfortunately, in this city, we see a lot of informal evictions where there are threats made against tenants to move them out, that the initial "we're going to evict you" and not playing it out through the court process. People think they need to move out when they're first notified. So there's, you know, the very specific process that has to occur, and a judgment has to be given for that to occur. So when tenants are facing eviction, they have a court date. They can ask for a trial if they would like to. But unfortunately, when you go to eviction court, a lot of the time you get one question. Did you pay your rent? And you say no. And you don't get an opportunity to actually expound upon what the reason was, what the circumstances were. So there's a very formal process. Does that need to change? Yes. We've had conversations for 3-4 years now on eviction court reform. And you have seen some of those imbalances changed in the courtroom. Rental assistance programs have definitely played a huge role in keeping people in their houses. But people need to know that there is a formal process. It's not a informal eviction where people will say, hey, you didn't pay your rent, you've got to leave. You have to see it play through all the way. You have protections as a tenant through that act. And I would say this too, that, you know, landlords may try to pay you off as well, say, hey, I'll give you money if you move out now and we won't pursue an eviction. So there are a lot of ways that informal evictions occur. Those, I would argue, are not legal ways because the relationship is set up. Yes, it needs to be further extended and the relationship needs to be more equitable because that's definitely not the case right now. But there is a process. There are ways in which communications need to occur between landlords and tenants, and that process needs to be followed. But we definitely need to update that. And there was an effort in the state legislature last year to do that. And unfortunately, that legislation was filed, but it never got a hearing. So we never did make any progress in regards to that.
And Councilman Arthur, I know you wanted to follow up on the previous caller.
In Louisville, you can go to rental units, see, smell, in some cases, taste third world living conditions that tenants live in. I'm talking urine and feces in hallways, cockroaches crawling on kids, colored water, mold and mushrooms sending people to the hospital, ceilings caving in. And outside of the physical infrastructure, we have issues with professional infrastructure, where some property managers, landlords are outright disrespectful to tenants, intimidating them, retaliating against them. If anyone thinks that a renter, a tenant, a Louisvillian would subject themselves to those conditions, they are delusional. That is not fact-based. But since we want to go off facts, I'll just say that I believe housing should be a human right, and that landlords should get real jobs and not be profiting off of the backs of hardworking people who are simply trying to live. But if you don't have affordable, comfortable, and sustainable housing, you basically can't live. And that's why we fight the fight that we fight every single day.
We are talking about renting and the rental market here in Louisville and beyond on In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. You just heard Councilman Jacory Arthur of Metro District 4 here in Louisville. Tony Curtis is also with us, Executive Director of the Metro Housing Coalition. Two journalists from the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, Jake Ryan, and the new Managing Editor of the Center, Adi Emanuel. Adi, I'm putting you on the spot here. Just let me know. I just wonder, you just came here from Chicago. I just wonder what the situation, generally speaking, the housing situation, availability, has been like in the Windy City, and you know, some of the comparisons you can make with what's going on here in Louisville.
Yeah, well, you know, I think affordability and lack of affordable housing, I think that that is something that's pretty universal that we see. And in Chicago, I think that that's been like a major issue. In terms of the oversight, and I think identifying problem landlords proactively or resolving, you know, and even tenants in terms of having access to resources and the legal knowledge they need to sort of advocate for themselves, that's something that I also think you see is an issue. And a lot of it, I think, goes back to some of the what underlies some of the inequity and how, sorry, that. What underlies a lot of the inequity in housing, which is, I mean, I think specifically thinking about the Black community, for instance, there is a lot of housing hardship, but there's also history of discrimination, redlining, of denying folks opportunities to build wealth and become and among, you know, the homeownership class. There's also, I think generally opportunity in that vulnerability in those communities that have been made more vulnerable in some ways for outside market forces and for moneyed individuals to make profit. So that vulnerability is opportunity for others often, and how they meet that opportunity, whether it's equitably or to provide fair housing and quality housing to folks, that's a big question. Sorry about the notification there. So I think that the power dynamics, the lack of affordability, and also the lack of a concerted sort of what is the overarching housing policy or you know, from a city or from a government entity, it's very hodgepodge. It's not something that's comprehensive or ensured to be equitable. I think some of the reviews of policies happening right now in Louisville is could actually be instructive for a lot of places, but that ultimately, I think that the inequity is kind of the big scenario. There's different market dynamics. You want to see as many single family homes being rented out in Chicago, for instance. Housing stock is a bit different, but I think that some of those dynamics are pretty common and universal.
Councilman Arthur, you wanted to comment on the affordable housing gap.
Yeah, a lot of times when we talk about that affordable housing gap, we reference this 31,000 units of housing that we're missing. But when you add other levels of low income housing that's missing and the average amount of people in that housing, we're talking about so many Louisvillians who can't afford their housing. If we group them together, it would be the third largest city in the state of Kentucky. And because the housing gap is so big and we invest so little, if the city kept investing just $10 million in the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, it would take, because of cost, almost 2,000 years to close the housing gap for families. And that's if the population didn't change and the cost never went up at all. I just wanted to add that just to make it very clear, the housing crisis is a humanitarian crisis.
And Tony, you had a comment as well.
Yeah, just quickly. And every time Councilman Arthur knocks me back on my feet, but just thinking about back at the Jacobs reporting is that the West Core, the Northwest Core, if you look at the housing needs assessment from 2019, these areas, these neighborhoods are about 70% renters in most respects, and in many cases have high levels of or percentages of single family housing. If you see a group like Amherst Group, Residential Group coming in and buying up these single family housing, you're automatically taking away opportunities for home ownership and equity building over the long term. So it tells me there are a lot of absentee landlords there that own single family properties and are giving people that are taking away from people the opportunity to own and to create equity. And that's troubling.
Let's see if we can get in one more call here. Charlene is in Louisville. Hello, Charlene. Welcome to In Conversation.
Yes, hello. I actually seem like it answered a lot of my questions. Ja'Cory Arthur, Alderman, seems like you're the person I should have been calling a long time ago. I wasn't aware about the rental registry until I saw the So I saw it on the news the other day, but I had been trying to call around and find out what type of help you can get for a lot of the things that you mentioned about dealing with landlords, especially people on subsidized housing and so forth. And I had been thinking about starting a community tenant union, but it looks like rental registry has already done the blueprint, and I will be contacting your office. But I wanted to ask, I guess my question is, to see, are there direct advocates for issues that renters are going through? I mean, you live your whole life, myself, I'm on subsidized housing, and I've lived and worked, and I'm on disability, but it seems like the landlord does not, they've just don't care. So I guess, is there a component in rental registry where they have advocates that can come out? And if not, is this something that we can talk about?
Great call, Charlene. Thank you for getting in touch with us. Go ahead, Councilman.
Thank you so much for asking that. I just want to remind folks, the power of the people is stronger than the people in power. I don't care if those people in power are the politicians, landlord, anyone else. There are way more of the masses than those folks. Louisville Tenants Union, New Directions Tenants Union. And when you call me, I can connect you with any of these groups. There are advocate groups that are working every single day to do work. Of course, we have the Grass Tops nonprofits. We have government entities, but the grassroots groups, in my opinion, are the most dedicated people fighting this fight, because government's getting paid to provide a service. Nonprofits are getting paid to provide a service. Grassroots people who are directly impacted, they do this work because their lives depend on it. So please do call me, 574-1104. That's our office number, and I'll be glad to connect you with anybody.
Charlene, thanks so much for the call. 502-814-TALK is our number, 502-814-8255. Before we run out of time, Ade, let me circle back with the project that you are launching here at the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, gathering input from people and to kind of plan your reporting on the many, many housing issues that there are out there. Tell us how people can get involved in this and get in touch with you.
Yeah, if you go to kycir.org, you'll see a little menu that says The Housing Project, and you can click there and see what we've got. We've also got a survey on that page that people can fill out. We're also going to actually be at a block party, a Russell Place of Promise block party next Saturday from 3 to 8 p.m. That's over at 18th and Muhammad Ali. We're going to be out there talking with folks about our work, asking them about their experiences, and sharing those surveys. And of course, you can reach out to investigate at kycir.org and shoot us a tip if you need. And we'll try to respond and see how we can, I think, provide stories and reporting that really matter to the people in this community.
What's the response been so far? I know it's been up for a little while.
Yeah, we've got about 100 responses so far, just under. And I think it touches on a lot of the types of things we're talking about. A lot of folks are worried about access to home ownership. They're worried about the, you know, corporate forces in the rental market and how that's affecting everything from costs to evictions to quality of living. And there's also voices of landlords there even talking about challenges they have working with the city and some other issues. So I think we've got a big variety of thoughts from folks, but I think that one thing that speaks loudly is that there's not in most folks' mind enough oversight and enough support. And I think that while there are lots of things happening in government, there are still like big barriers to the equity that folks are really calling for. And we're just happy to be working on this series
to
help provide more value.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. So much more I wanted to cover. We'll come back and revisit this topic. Thanks to Adi Emanuel and Jake Ryan from the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, Tony Curtis from the Metro Housing Coalition, and Councilman Jacory Arthur. And thanks to our In Conversation production team, Michelle Tyreen Johnson, Laura Ellis, Brad Yost, and Russell Wells. I'm Rick Howlett. Thanks for listening.